this anybody's very first kirtan? Excited? So, kirtan is a ancient tradition of yoga. All these different yogas that are out there. There's yogas from Tibet, yogas from Nepal, yogas from India, yogas from America. We've created our own yoga here. And one of the most traditional yogas is Bhakti Yoga. It's like one of the original yogas. So the first time you see the word yoga is in the Katha Upanishads. And in the Katha Upanishads, it breaks it down as linking your cart to your horse. That's the yoga that they talk about, is to link your cart, to connect. You're going to yoga your cart to your horse before you go to war. So the first definition of yoga involves war. And then what's interesting is the Bhagavad Gita takes place on a battlefield. And it can feel like you're at a war with your own mind sometimes. You're in the battle. Ever get in the battle with your own mind? And that's a real battle. And there's a battle of sukha and dukkha. Sukha is like happy. Dukkha is like sad. So dukkha is like, du is like the, it means uneven axle hole, like a circle that is uneven. And I always think it's like the bad shopping cart from the 80s that Home Depot still has them. Yeah, if you go to Home Depot, you'll encounter some of these bad carts. But what they say is that the mind is so interesting, right? Because they give an analogy of this cart and this horse and how yoga should function and the mind should function. So what they say is that the horses are your senses. So the horses are the senses. So that's your senses. Like, I like this, I like that thing. Whatever it is. I like cake. I like alcohol. I like this flavor. I like bread. Right? You know, you just like things and you dislike things. And that's your manas, your mind. Right? So the horses are the senses. Right? And then the reins, that's the manas. So the manas is like your mind. That's where we get mantra from. Mantra, tra, to control, man, the mind. So it's mantra, right? Because it helps you to control your mind, to recite something over and over and over again. Because your mind will then, if it doesn't have something good to latch on to, it can latch on to something else and go play that over and over. And that's a lot of fun. So mantra, so man is the senses, is the part of your mind that deals with your senses. So you make the decision off of that man, right? Do you make that choice that you know is not serving your higher good, right? That thing that's going to derail your path. Your manas is continually trying to sabotage you. It's wanting pleasure and it's wanting you to satisfy that part. Not good. If we're making manas-based decisions, we're making decisions based off our senses, most likely not bringing us to our best self. So the reins of the horse. Horses, that's the senses, and they're pulling, right? And then the reins, that's the manas. So, okay, so you have some control over your interaction with your senses. So then who's holding the reins? They say it's It's the Bhuti. The Bhuti, like Buddha, right? Here we are, beautiful yoga. And it's the Bhuti, right? This Bhuti, that's the one that's in a yogic way is supposed to be making your decisions for you. If you are a yogi, your Bhuti is helping you to make these decisions that are then pulling on these reins, which are your manas, which are controlling your senses. What's so mind-blowing to me about this analogy is that then they say that the soul, the Atman, they say Atman, but soul, that your soul is the passenger. Not even part of the equation. It's not even like making those decisions of your sensory experience. It is purely a experience. It's along for the ride. If I'm my Bhuti and Joe is my soul, Joe's just like, all right, here we go. Right? He's like, that's why in yoga, your soul is pure. It's not, you know how you could say, people will say things like, they have a dark soul. Or, oh, you have an old soul. Or you have a good soul. They're a good soul. Right? Not in yoga. In yoga, the concept that you have a corrupt soul, it's not the way it is. Your soul is perfect. Your soul is good. It's locked in. It is Sat Chit and mostly Ananda, which means it is truth, conscious, and mostly made of bliss. So you are sugar and spice and literally everything nice. Isn't that nice to know? That's your soul. Now, one of my teachers, he told me this, a brilliant thing once. He said, your soul, he said, it's similar to water, the molecule of H2O, in that I can take water. You can take water and I can put all kinds of dirt in here and make this water dirty and filthy. And then I can run it through one of the fancy filters where Irene takes her water. We were talking about this earlier, her filtered water. But we could take it to that and we could dump it through a filter and it could be dirty brown water and we could make it drinkable, beautiful, clean water. Why? Because it never really got touched. Like it never broke the molecule of water, right? So your soul is the same. Your soul is Sat Chit and mostly Ananda. That's great. Good to know. That's why the soul is the passenger. And your Bhuti is the one we're supposed to be relying on to make our decisions for life. If you're making decisions based off of your manas, it's not good. If you're making decisions based off of your ahamkar, your ego, probably not good. If you're making decisions through the Bhuti, they say that the Bhuti is just adjacent to the soul. So they're like me and Joe, we're on the cart, right? We got our cart, we got our horse, we got the senses, and my soul's right here, and Joe's close enough where I can feel Joe, right? I can feel his presence. Hopefully it's impacting my Bhuti, but the Bhuti is quiet at first. Have you noticed this as you get older? The quiet part of you starts to speak up a little louder, and the immature part of you starts to quiet down. Somebody asked George St. Pierre once. George St. Pierre is a great fighter and lifelong martial artist. And they said, you know, are you ever going to fight again? Are you ever going to fight again? And he kind of laughed. And he's in his 40s now. You know, 38, 39. He's older, though, like, for fighting. And he goes, it's like you just asked me if I want to play with Matchbox cars again. He's like, listen, I'm still a martial artist. I'm still going to do jiu-jitsu, and I'm still gonna practice, and I'm still going to do that. But the fight game, that was something I did in my 20s and 30s. Like, so, like, you ever have that experience where your manas? My manas used to be so loud, and it would be like you, like, driving me to do this or that. As I've gotten older, that quieter part, that buddhi, slowly starts to come out loud, a little louder, and you start to make better choices. But it was with the awareness of this information where I went, I had a dark night of the soul once, and I had to make a decision, and I thought, where am I making this decision from? My buddhi, my manas, or my ahamkar? And when I looked at that clearly, I could see where I was making the decision. And from that moment, I realized something really, really important. It's to, like, pay attention. And your buddhi, while it's at the reins and it has the control, the manas, it's way louder. And the ahamkar, the ego, that's super loud too, especially when you're younger. And as time goes on, hopefully the buddhi takes over a little bit. So this is just some yogic theory. And then we can drop all this theory. And we can experience bhakti yoga, which is this yoga of devotion. Devotion to what? Devotion to something that is probably beyond what we could truly understand. But we're going to try anyway. Exciting. The mood of bhakti is devotion to Krishna, typically, which is a loving relationship with the divine. And the best way I can describe it is parental love. Not God's necessarily parental love for us, but our parental love for child. And it goes back and forth. There's this ebb and flow between those two things. One of my teachers says this great story, and it really taught me what bhakti was. And he says, imagine you had a daughter, and your daughter was 16, and she ran away from home. And she got into drugs, and, you know, you lived in New York, you heard a little bit here and there. She made it to Florida or something like that. And you're like spun out, and you don't know what to do. But she got addicted to drugs, and, you know, all these horrible things that you heard, just little bits and pieces along the way. And at a certain point, you heard, you know, from somebody through the grapevine that, you know, she was destitute, homeless, you know, selling her body, whatever. I mean, the most horrible things, right? As a parent, it's like crushing you, killing you. And finally, 4 years later, you get a call at 2 a.m. And that call at 2 a.m. comes through. And you pick up the phone, and it's your daughter. And she says, Mom, Dad, I want to come home. It's like, could you imagine that? Does the parent then go, where the hell have you been? What the hell's wrong with you? No. You go, oh my God, I'll be there. When's the next flight? I'll be there. And you go and you embrace. That mood is the mood of bhakti. That there's there can be separation even. But in that separation grows this intense thing between you and another. And hopefully this is between you and God, you know, because it's flawed in our material world, the way we operate with each other. But it's meant for God, right? In whatever form God takes, and many of God's forms are represented here beautifully. This is Krishna here, and this is like a teenage Krishna, and you can see he's got his flute, and he has a peacock feather, because Krishna, he's meant to be loved and lovable, and he's not awe and reverent and opulent, right? There's later versions of Krishna that are like that, or Ram, right? Or like, I know for me, I was brought up Catholic, and it was like, there's Jesus way up there. And it's like, this is kind of scary, you know, this whole thing. And like, but it was like, Jesus was way up there. So therefore, it was like, he's so far away. Where the mood with Krishna, especially like this, with his peacock feather, he's walking through the forest barefoot with a yellow dhoti, just playing his flute, picking up peacock feathers and sticking them in his hair, taking twigs and putting them in his toes, and just playing, just being silly with his friends. Like, this is the mood of Krishna. And that thought of the parental love that you would experience through that separation from your child. It's like, so when you cry out to connect, they say in the bhakti tradition that Krishna feels that, like that parent who was like, oh my God, why did you wait so long to reach out? I've been here the whole time. I would have come right away if you listened. Not if you listened, but I would have come right away if you reached out. Can you reach out? And that's what kirtan is. Kirtan is a crying out. It's a ritualistic crying out to connect to God for the price of a song. That's it. For the price of a song. So that's all it is. There's not much asked of you in kirtan other than to sing. With a little awe and reverence of this mystical thing that we're going to do. But it's just singing the names of Krishna or God. And in a way, we could set something, what they call bodhicitta in Tibetan Buddhism. Bodhicitta, you set bodhicitta and you dedicate any merit from your practice to all sentient beings, to all beings. Not just the ones you like, right? Even the ones you don't like. They're part of the bodhicitta. So you raise bodhicitta by saying, whatever I get from this practice, I'm going to give back. And you might think, and in our new agey world of goddess culture, of it's like there's like toxic masculinity and there's toxic femininity, I think. So I think it's like there's a toxic version of like, I-ness, like it's about me, like I'm like it, and it's the exact opposite of bodhicitta. Like bodhicitta is whatever I do and whatever benefit I get from this, I'm giving back to everybody else. And in that moment, what you feel, it's intense. It's so, you feel overwhelmed with gratitude and connection to your fellow person, even the people you feel disconnected from, you feel extra connected to through bodhicitta. So even though it's not a practice of kirtan, it's a beautiful practice. that any merit we receive from this, we're going to give for the benefit of all others. Nice. Huh? Time. You good now?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you know, I've been looking for a kirtan. I'm not sure what that is, but I want to go to one. I had heard the word in a song. I said, I think I want to go to a kirtan. I don't know what it is. I don't know where to find one. And she said, oh, they do it here Wednesday nights. And that was a Wednesday. It was 11 a.m. Wednesday. So she said, come back. And I did. I went back. And I was sitting in my car looking into the studio, very nervous, like I don't belong here. I don't know what I'm doing here. And I convinced myself to go in, and it was like full-on lockdown times. And we had to wear masks. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what anyone was saying. I was very confused, but I went back the next Wednesday and the Wednesday after that. And then someone played this song, and Millard explained, because I was still confused, and he said, you know, you can kind of think of this song as calling out to a dear friend. And once he said that, I was like, oh, okay, I can get behind that. I understand. I can understand calling out to a dear friend. It was like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hey, oh, my dear friend, oh, my dear friend. So. That's why I chose this to play tonight.
Krishna, Krishna.
Of your own mind, how it's settled, it's clear, it's almost like a, in Tibetan they call it neluk, which means like you're like a boat that's resting on the water, and just like a canoe, it's just kind of ebbing and flowing with the gentle wave. Just kind of going with it. Feel how the nature of the mind is neluk right now. So it's like using kirtan as a tool to get that space to feel that feeling.
Jai. My name is Jamie Love. The last time I was here was the last time I played kirtan, like 2 years ago.
And we still feel it.
Oh, Ram Ram. Happy to be back. Miss you, Yoga Paul.
Paul.
Yoga Paul. Buddha Paul. All right. Do I play the chant that I'm probably going to mess up on? Or... Could I just speak it into existence? Any requests? Oh, I forgot about that one. That one? That one?
Me.
Which one?
The class. She does that. I'd like to take a moment and to dedicate my chant to a friend of mine who has recently left their body, David Newman. Did any of you ever sing along to any of his chants? He was a kirtan artist, and I've had several opportunities to spend time and space with him and chant with him and be up on stage with him. And he was a really wonderful person. He really lived his dharma through leading kirtan and He was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor, and 5 weeks later, he left his body. So I just would like to offer this chant to him and his family, his 12-year-old daughter. You know, we never know. 5 weeks, right? You're living your life, everything's great, and then it's like, hey, you got 5 weeks to live. The material world could be a really scary place. So much anxiety and depression and what ifs that we don't know. But like Miller said, we could use the mantra to go beyond our habitual everyday thought patterns, which is mostly fear, right? So a lot of times with habits, we have to break one habit by doing another habit, right? I gave up smoking cigarettes and then I just decided to eat. It's great. But we have to find healthier habits, right? So we have our habitual mind patterns and thoughts that are just on autoplay in our mind. And we can change that with a new habit. We could use a mantra, right? So man is mind, tras, to go beyond. So we use the mantra like a vehicle to go beyond our thinking mind. And mantra has been really helpful for me because, I don't know about you, but I don't really have very healthy thoughts. The more you practice mantra, the more you find your mind starts to go there without you even realizing it. So repeat after me. Bhava Nam Kevalam. That means only the name of the beloved. Imagine that was what was on your mind all the time. Only the name of the beloved. Instead of all the other crap that flows through the consciousness. You know, and our creator, source, God, universe, whatever label you want to put on it, I like to say it's the one that goes by a thousand names, the one that cannot be named. Whatever that is, that's what we sing to. That's what we're calling out to as a dear friend. We use the mantra to connect, right? So we clear out our mind, the chitta vrittis, the mind chatter, the mind stuff, so that we can abide in our true nature, our sat chit ananda. And we use the mantra as a vehicle to help us get there.
Baba Nam Kevalam.
So, repeat after me. Govinda.
Govinda.
That's the name for Govinda, Krishna. Go means cow, herder of the cow, Govinda. So,
cow herder.
So it's Govinda. Govinda, Govinda, Gopal, Nandala. Gopal.
Nandala, hey Gopal. Hey Gopal Nandalal, 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 hey Gopal Nandalal.
is God. He go Radha Krishna Govinda Govinda
He go Radha Krishna Govinda Govinda
Krishna Govinda Govinda 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 Krishna Govinda Govinda
One more time with your heart
Krishna Govinda Krishna Govinda Govinda Krishna Govinda Govinda
Take a moment and dedicate this practice to all the beings everywhere. Any merit that we receive from this, we give freely with the knowing that you are a part of that lexicon. Namaste.
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 Thank you so much for coming. Paul, is it okay if I mention my kirtan? I have a kirtan on the North Shore at Om Namo. That's my yoga space. I teach one day a week and have kirtan one day a week. And then Jamie does massage there as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice place and it's a good place to come. And yeah, I'm probably going to change it to Mondays, but right now it's Sundays. The asana class is at 5 and the kirtan is at 6. The kirtan is always free. There's free japa meditation before my class if you're interested in that too. But it's probably going to change to Monday night kirtans. And it's going to be a 6 p.m. class and then a 7 p.m. kirtan. But for now, it's going to be Sundays. And if you ever need acupuncture, I'm here. Massage for Jamie. And my friend Joe is a master harmonium player. He's been playing piano for his whole life. And he played in Christian churches, organ, keyboard. I mean, he's master musician, so if you ever need lessons in that way, and but also with the harmonium, he's great. So
he's great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miller.
Thank you.
Thank you. See, it works. Yeah. Go on. Who's here?
Nobody ever wants to go home.